It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded on March 27th, 2024. And in the pod with me this time, it's Kelly Fuller. Hi.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being in the pod. So question number one, you are a Napa native. True or false?
Half truth. I was born in Vallejo.
Okay.
And I lived in Vallejo until I was nine. And then my mother remarried a man. Well, she didn't remarry him, but she remarried a man who lived in Napa. And that's when I came to Napa.
Mm-hmm. So almost a native.
Right. Absolutely.
You're like a cousin of a native.
Almost. Yeah, almost.
What's your earliest Napa memory? Because I think of you as somebody who has a whole repository of Napa things in your head.
I would say going to Rufino's with the family and my stepfather's parents every once in a while would take the whole family to Rufino's, and we'd get the back room, this huge table and all the great Italian food.
Rufino's is where is now Philippi's, correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
On First
mm-hmm.
Street, old quote unquote old timers.
Yes, Rufino's. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm an old timer.
Now, you have done and been so many things in the community and are still, for example, voice of the fair.
Oh, right. Yes.
Former morning show host on this radio station.
Yes.
Entertainer and performer, singer at variety of venues on the regular.
Yes. Yes.
Which of those is the real Kelly Fuller?
Well, I mean, you also left out that I used to work at Queen of the Valley. I started their concierge program. And I've been a concierge in many different resorts and hotels throughout the Napa Valley. I've been a doula and a midwife's assistant and a childbirth educator. But I think they're all me. They're all just interests I've had. I was never that kid that was going to pick one thing and do the one thing my whole life. I just kind of go wherever the tide takes me. Oh, that sounds like fun. Oh, that looks cool. I want to know more about that. And next thing I know, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting this show at the Vine was an accident. I had never had aspirations to be in radio and ended up doing it for several years. It was really fun.
Yeah. So they're all the real you.
I would say so.
Did people ever try to tell you, you know, you need to focus on one thing. You're trying to do everything. Why just be one thing?
I think that was sort of the message back in my school days was, you know, what are you going to be? Are you going to be a doctor? Are you going to be a lawyer? But, or, you know, are you going to marry a rich man? My grandma used to say, you know, Kelly, it's just as easy to fall in love with the poor man as it is to fall in love with the rich man. But it just wasn't for me. I didn't like school. Absolutely hated school, except for the music part of it. And when I was younger, I did believe I'm going to be a singer. That's all I'm going to do. I really did think. But then, you know, as you grow up and realize, well, that's not paying the bills. What now?
So being a singer was maybe the ultimate dream?
It really was. I mean, when I was probably in about first grade, I had this, I saved it for years. I don't know where it is now, but the teacher said, draw a picture of you as a grown-up. And I drew a picture of me standing on a stage with a microphone in my hand. So I've always thought that if I just tried hard enough, I could be a famous singer like Barbara Streisand. And I kind of was on my way, actually. I went to Napa College and I got a degree in performing arts and I had an agent and I was performing. But, you know, when we decided to start our family, I thought, I don't know that I want to be playing these clubs late at night and trying to raise kids. And so I put it all on hold. And so then that's why I'm back to it now. About 13 years ago, I decided, well, let's get back to the music.
Yeah. We have a similar story in that way because I had every intention of working in theater as my profession in some fashion. And then I had a son when I was 24 years old, right? And it's like, okay, that's really not going to pan out. I need to have a regular job. And so that's why, I had gotten started in radio and I decided to stay in it because I was getting a paycheck every week.
Right. You can count on, and you're still using your entertainment abilities because it's definitely performance mm-hmm. when you're on the air on the radio.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So you wanted to be a singer. There's probably a story or memory about first time on stage, first competition, first performance. Let's talk about that.
Definitely. So I was, again, back to first grade, first or second. And this was in Vallejo. And my sister was in kindergarten. And the teacher said there was going to be a talent show. Who wants to be in it? And I raised my hand. And she said, what would you like to do? And I said, my sister and I are going to sing. So when my sister found out, she was not very happy at first. she doesn't really like to be on stage. But I convinced her and I came home and told my mom, you know, Kim and I are going to be in the talent show. And my mom thought, oh, okay, whatever. She didn't believe it. And so my sister and I would practice singing in our bedroom with a jump rope as a microphone. And then finally, someone called my mom, the teacher or somebody, and said, you should come to the talent show. We're going to do it. It was during school hours. And my mom was like, really? And I thought, I know the perfect song for my sister and I to sing. It's about a frog. How cute. It's called Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. And my sister and I got on that stage and we held hands and rocked back and forth and sang that song a cappella all the way through. Of course, I had no idea what it meant. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking out on the stage and having what I now know were butterflies. Like, oh my gosh. But as soon as I started singing, I went, oh, I like this. Mm. Then they all clapped.
Uh-huh. And you're hooked.
That's it.
For the benefit of those listening, the song by Three Dog Night, what was the actual meaning of it?
Joy to the world. Well, if I were king of the world, tell you what I do. I throw away the bombs and the, what was it?
Something in the wars.
And the wars. Yeah, it's like an anti-war song. And make sweet love to you, which, I don't know, means like holding someone's hand.
You were how old again?
It was like first or second grade.
Yeah, that's great. At some point, you started to take it up a notch. Like I said, this is what you wanted to do. You competed in things, talent shows.
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't know that I could sing until I was about 12. And that's when A Star Is Born with Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson came out. Of course, I wasn't allowed to watch the movie, but my mom bought the record album and I heard the song Evergreen. I was enamored. And so I used to play it on the record and sing with it. And one day my mom said, oh, wow, you kind of sound like Barbara Streisand. Let me hear that again. And then every time someone came to the house, she'd say, listen to Kelly sing, listen. And of course I was nervous, but I would do it. And I would stand up in the living room and sing Evergreen. Oh, I can't believe she can hold out that last note. I thought, oh, maybe I can sing. Maybe this is something I can really do. And I would just say through school, anytime there was anything to do with music, I did it. It had to be free. In fact, we were at St. John's Lutheran School for a few years and they had a band, but you had to pay to be in it. You had to buy your instrument and we didn't have any money. So I went to the teacher and I said, is there any way I could get in for free and borrow an instrument? He said, well, if you play the trumpet, you can. So I played trumpet and I did everything. I did the handbells. I was in choir and then went to vintage and I did the vocal music workshop and choir and chamber choir. I mean, literally everything I could possibly do. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say there were a lot of competitions. It was kind of a thing in the 80s where they'd have like karaoke competitions for young people and you'd buy cassette tapes. Yes, children, there used to be cassette tapes and sing to a backing track and they'd rank you or whatever. But mm-hmm. mostly just shows, anything I could be in, anytime I could get on a stage, I would do it.
Mm-hmm. And at some point, did you start to take voice lessons?
I did. I actually got into pageants, which made me just laugh forever because I was not into my appearance at all. I just totally was. I was that girl that never brushed her hair and had big knots, you know, as a kid, skin knees. I still have the scars to prove it. But pageants were 50% talent. So I thought, gosh, I can sing. It's going to let me sing. And I won a couple. And so it was pay my way through school. And also it allowed me to take voice lessons. So I studied with William Gorton for several years privately. And that was primarily focused on classical and opera. But it gave me the chops. It gave me the technique that I'm able to use today to sing anything I want.
There are so many singers today that become popular and successful who don't have any of that technique training. Mm. And I'm sure you hear this too when sometimes you're playing a song here on the radio station and you go like, why did they breathe there?
Right.
You know, things like that.
Right.
Like that's probably not the exact perfect way to do that. Do you think that should people who are interested in performing go that more formal route and take lessons or just let natural talent, you know, and mimicry be the path?
I think you really have to do what you feel called to do, what you have access to, what you can afford. I mean, certainly it depends on the kind of music you're going into. So if you're interested in pop music, it probably would be necessary if you hit it really big and were going on tour and needed to be able to save your voice. But at that point, you could probably get some lessons. If you want to go into jazz or opera or classical, you really do need some formal training. But yeah, I do think it's helpful, very much so. I feel like I've always been able to, throughout the years, sing rock, R&B, whatever I wanted to do, because I learned how to properly sing and not damage my vocal cords. Because we do see a lot of that, of vocal cord damage with the more famous people that are singing on a regular basis.
Yeah. And some folks can come close to ruining their voice forever. Like
right.
Billy Joel is an example. Like he struggled for years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Great voice, natural voice, but he was pushing, singing mm-hmm. so much. And if you sing a lot and your technique right. isn't right, that's when you get nodes and you get all those other things.
Right. Yeah. And also, you know, there is something to be said for singing too much. Even if you have that training, just like when I'm at the Voice of the Fair, doing the Voice of the Fair, I have to go on vocal rest for a couple of days after that gig because I am talking almost nonstop for hours and hours and hours and hours for several days in a row. And that takes its toll on your vocal cords. So some of these people too, they have to have more limits, but it's the whole making money machine, right?
Yeah, you got a tour scheduled, you got to sing them all.
Right.
Let's talk about being the voice of the fair for a second. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Town and Country Fair here in Napa, right?
Yes.
How many years have you done that?
Oh my goodness. Gosh, of course, you know, we always lose track because of 2020
yes.
and 2022, but I want to say seven.
Okay.
Will this be my eighth year? Seventh or eighth.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that I get the impression you really like doing that.
I do.
Why?
I don't know. I'm a nerd. I am though. I just got back from the Star Trek convention in San Francisco. Okay. Just throwing that in there. I am a total nerd and I'm proud of it. I think because the fair has a nostalgia for me and it's like, it was always the place where even if your income level was low, you could swing a day at the fair, right? And you'd run into people and it was magical as a child. And I remember hearing the voice of the fair and thinking, oh, he's this celebrity, he's this big deal, right? And so I love that. I love the nostalgic aspect of it. But I also love helping people. It's just in my nature. And so it's not just making announcements. I'm helping with lost and found. I help with lost children. I answer questions. I'm an information bank for whatever people need while they're at the fair. I work in tandem with the paramedics. So I'm not providing any medical care, but I can help kind of direct people over there. And I love that part of it. And I just love the fair. I love anything with rides and entertainment and music and fun. It's just great to be in the middle of it.
You know, it strikes me that there are, you know, there are many kinds of people in the world, but one of the general rough divisions we can make are people who look at things and say, that's not my problem.
Yeah.
And there are people who look at things and say, how can I help? And you just said something about helping.
Yes.
And one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about was what you're doing at the VFW. Is it the VFW Hall?
Yeah, the American Legion,
American
you mean,
Legion
down
Hall,
the American
sorry.
Legion? Yeah.
American Legion Hall. I always get that confused. A few weeks ago, I saw your social media post about a pancake breakfast.
Yes.
And I said, that's what I'm doing.
Yes,
and so
you came down.
I came down.
It was
and,
great.
It was a bunch of folks and we chatted. It was very nice. But I thought, why is Kelly doing this? You know, it was like, people must say that to you sometimes.
No, they don't say that to me.
They just expect it.
Okay, so they just expect it. Okay, so in full disclosure, because I feel so safe in the pod right now.
Good.
Full disclosure, I have had to learn how to not take it to an extreme, because I can be one of the unhealthy givers, which I give so much away that I don't take care of myself. Okay, so that's out there. I don't know why I'm that way. That's just how I am. And I've become to a much healthier place. But I go where I feel called. And I almost can't explain it. I can't tell you why or what's calling me. But I was involved with the American Legion many, many years ago when it used to be a really broken down building. It was in such disarray. And someone had written a letter to the editor, a couple of the veterans said, we need some help. So I came in to see if I could raise some funds and all of that. And that's just another story for another day, but it kind of didn't work out. But what happens, they ended up getting a commander who was able to make it happen. So now it's restored and beautiful. And someone there who remembered my involvement back then asked if I could get involved again. And so I did. And it's easy for me. Okay. So I can show up at the end of their breakfast, it's only once a month, and I can wash dishes and help clean up. It's an hour out of my life, right? But it's doing something to give back to the people who gave to us. And I think that matters. And I feel like it's almost selfish on my part, because I get so much out of taking care like that. And now that I'm doing it in a healthy way, so I'm also taking care of myself, it really feels good. And it's fun. I like fun, Barry. I like to have fun.
Not me. I like to be sad and unhappy.
I know. You're bringing me down.
So did you have military in your family background? Did you grow up around military?
Not a lot. My grandfather served, which most people of that era did. Not a lot, but then in more recent years, my nephew went into the Marines, and then my husband Tom's family was kind of a military family. I don't know why I was drawn to veterans. I've been drawn to veterans forever. I was involved with Operation With Love From Home almost since the very beginning. But also maybe it's the music tie-in as well, because, you know, a lot of them do like that era of that I sing, the jazz standards and such. And I do go to the veterans' home and perform there on a somewhat regular basis. But my son did go into the Air Force several years ago, and it was something. He left my house as a teenager and came back this, you know, Air Force guy. But he's out now, and he's going to school. So that was, when that happened, I even kind of went, oh, maybe that's why I've been so involved all these years. Now my son's in it. But
yeah, it's interesting. I sort of had assumed that your involvement with the American Legion now was because your son had been in there, was recently in the service.
You know,
but it started
way before that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Some things we just end up being connected to in life without ever, you know, specific reason. Or
right.
Anything. Well, you know, good on you for all those things that you're doing.
Oh, thanks, Barry.
And if the world isn't the same without the folks who want to do all the giving. So next topic for conversation, being a doula, talking about helping people. First, we should probably have you explain, what is a doula?
A doula provides non-medical support to people having a baby. So it's comfort measures, whatever information they want to know, connecting to resources, and usually when they will go into labor, they will have the doula come to the house. It's always their call, whatever they want, but you'll come to the house in earlier labor. You know how to recognize signs of the labor progressing and kind of help them transition to the hospital, and then you stay with them till the baby's born. And usually there's a little bit of postpartum assistance as well.
What's the difference between a doula and a midwife? I'm sure you've answered that question a thousand times.
I have. So it seems like everything I've ever done was like, what's that? What's a concierge? What's a doula? Mm-hmm. A midwife does provide medical care. So it's like a doctor, if you will. But the midwife can be in the hospital, or the midwife could be doing births at home or in a birthing center.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually checking the heart tones and they're doing all the medical stuff.
Right. How long did you do that kind of work?
Oh my goodness. I know it was over 100 births. I stopped counting at that point at 100. So, oh, I got to 100. It wasn't a lot more than that. It was several years. Several years.
Mm-hmm. And all locally?
Sort of. I mean, we would also be in the surrounding counties. So Solano County, Sonoma County, mm-hmm. kind of around the area.
Do you stay in contact with any of those moms or their kids?
Mm-hmm.
Do
Some
you
of
have
them.
Like 100 sort of kids of your own out there?
Yeah. I mean, I have actually. There's a couple that I see on a regular basis or we're connected on Facebook. Sometimes I run into them. And my youngest doula baby was born in 2000. So, wow. Yikes, turning 24. I have doula babies turning 24 this year. It's wild. But yes, I've definitely run into them. It's pretty neat. There was a story in, I'm so sorry, I forgot the publication, a magazine, a local magazine. But they did a story years ago of about the doula work that I was doing, and they took a picture, and I was able to find a lot of my doula clients, and I had an infant in my arms, and then I had kids all around me up to 12 years old, and that was really cool.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your husband, Tom, who uh-huh. I was not going to mention because his head gets so big so
I
quick,
know.
Right?
Oh, such right. an ego.
Uh-huh. but since you brought him up, how did the two of you get together? I have to ask because I feel like you two are one of the most maybe well-known couples in Napa, at least in
oh,
my
so?
World.
Yeah.
You're very active. You're always
we are very
out
active.
Doing
no, that's
things,
true.
In,
yeah. We've been here
engaged.
A long time. And yeah. So I met Tom. It always makes me sound like I was this wild child when I tell the story. So I kind of cringe every time someone asks me how I met him.
Just own it.
Okay, Barry. Safe in the pod. So I was 20 years old and I was going to Napa College. And Tom is a little bit older than me. I'll just say it like that. I'll be nice.
Did you say
Tom's
a lot older?
Tom's older. So I never met him in school or anything. And there was a boy that kind of liked me, I guess. And so he had a birthday party. And then Tom's roommate was at the birthday party, right? And I met the roommate and I liked him. And so he and I started talking. And one night he said, hey, why don't you come over? Okay, I'm going to really date myself now. Why don't you come over and listen to the new Janet Jackson CD? And I said, okay, but you have to understand, I'm not that kind of girl. And if you come in and meet my parents and then understand that it's just going to be listening to music, I'll do it. Okay, great, fine. Well.
And you were, I'm sorry, 20?
20.
Okay.
And so Tom was on a date. And so I'm at Tom's house with his roommate listening to the Janet Jackson CD. And Tom comes home from his date. And I just went, okay. And I don't know what it was. I always say the angels sang when he walked in the door. There was just something about him. And they ended up inviting me and my friends over for a movie night. Video, VCR children, VCRs, to watch videos, to watch movies. And I kept scooting closer to him on the couch. And keep on, put your arm around me. And he finally put his arm around me. Anyway, that was it. I literally, I wasn't going to date anybody else. Like, I just knew. This was the guy.
Wow.
I know. I don't know that happens very often. People think it, but then they're wrong.
The Italians have a phrase that I'm really fond of.
Oh.
Colpo del fulmine. I think I'm getting that right. The lightning, the thunderbolt.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I just never would have believed it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm a total believer in it.
And yeah, so that's what happened. And we started dating and, that was it.
Wow.
That was it.
And that's been a few years.
A few years. Yeah. We are, okay, how old am I? I'm 57. So 37 years? 37 years ago.
Good for you. So possibly our last topic here is our time is running out on the pod, mm-hmm. but I want to get into a project that you're currently working on, and it's really hyper-local interesting.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And because it's about a thing called the Dream Bowl.
Yes.
And I have to admit, I never knew any of this history of the Dream Bowl until I was talking to Scott Sedgley at some point. And he started telling a story about going there. And then I saw a copy of a poster or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, this is a chapter of Knapp history I never had come across. Tell us more, first of all, about what was the Dream Bowl and then about your project.
Well, the Dream Bowl, the building is still there, by the way. It's on, it's right off of 29 off of Kelly Road. And if you, we've driven past it a million times and we never saw it. But if you look, if you're coming south from Napa, look to your left, right past the Kelly Road, and you'll see a kind of a, I don't know if it's a hexagon or a really weird looking roof. That's the Dream Bowl. Of course, now it's offices. It was opened in 1941 and it was a dance hall and everybody played there. Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Tommy Dorsey, everybody, every big band that existed then. Louis Armstrong played there. And so the folks used to go from Napa and Vallejo to go dancing here, a lot of military men. And that's actually where my grandparents met. And I remember Grandma would always talk about, I met your grandpa at the Dream Bowl and I was only 15. I lied about my age and the whole thing. And I did not know the building was still there. And so what I wanted to do was to create an immersive experience of sort of what it might have been like in the 40s to go to the Dream Bowl. So at first I wrote a show with Mike Greensill and we did it at Blue Note and we sold out immediately. We had Michael Amon, the author of the book about the Dream Bowl there. He's local here in Napa. We did a little interview with him before the show. He sold his books at the show and then we did the show of all the 40s swing music and all of that with the quartet. And I said, wouldn't it be great to get a big band, like a full orchestra, and let people dance? I know we have ballroom dancers here in Napa and surrounding Vallejo, and put on this whole, like, let's get in the time machine and go back in time. But the expense of that is extraordinary, Barry. Let me tell you, I said, I can't do this. But I applied for a grant to Napa Valley Presents, and we got a grant. So it's been really challenging. I think this will be my one and done producer hat. One and done, Barry. I'm telling you, I'm never doing this again. It is harder, and I know you know, okay? It's the hardest thing I've ever done. But June 22, upstairs above the Blue Note in the Jam Cellars Ballroom, the old Napa Valley Opera House, we're doing it. Mike Greensill Orchestra. There's going to be a dance floor. It's going to be like the time machine is going to happen. And we have this really great MC. I don't know if you know him.
Oh, tell me
about him. His name is Barry Martin.
Oh, he's famous.
You knew I was going to say that. And Barry is, for all you folks out there listening, Barry is going to be interviewing Michael again about in the beginning of the show. And he's going to be our host for the evening. And I'm really excited.
June 22nd, 2024.
Yes.
When will tickets go on sale for that?
As we speak, they are being, it's been put up on the website, the Blue Note Napa website. Mm-hmm. I've been in conversation with the folks over there. It takes a little more, like the ticket levels and all that. It's a little more complicated than like the shows that I normally do at Blue Note. Mm-hmm. So it's taking a little more time. But it should be up anytime now. People can actually join my email list if they want to be first to know, because I've promised everyone on my email list, the minute it goes up, you are the first ones to be made aware of it.
That's going to be one performance only?
One night only.
And the title of the whole thing again is?
A Night at the Dream Bowl, 1940s.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool concept. I'm glad you're doing it. Thank you for inviting me to be involved.
Yes, thank you.
Before we conclude, you perform at the Blue Note pretty regularly, and I know I've seen you over at the Fink as well. I don't know if that's
at the Fink. Just Mike's playing and I'm there enjoying myself and he'd be like, Kelly, get up here and sing a couple tunes, that sort of thing. I'm actually going to be singing in Vallejo coming up at the Empress Marquee, mm-hmm. which is that lounge next door to the theater. Mm-hmm. That's on April 5th, and you can get dinner, an Italian dinner, and we're doing a Rat Pack show there.
Oh boy, that sounds good.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
April 5th, huh?
Yes, April 5th.
Kelly Fuller has been safe in the pod for today's edition, and thank you so much. It was really enjoyable. I knew it would be. You've just got such a positive vibe that surrounds you. I think it's because of all the good stuff you do.
Thanks, Barry. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me today.
Appreciate you. The Barry Pod, recorded on, with Kelly Fuller as the guest on the 27th of March, 2024.
You're listening to The Barry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.